Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. We've done a couple shows today, and we went back in history a little bit, and we looked at what Plutarch said and what Plubius said on a couple of the other shows that we did. And just to give you a brief outline, Polybius was considered the historian of historians, and he set the standard for writing history. He set the standard really for news reporting, because that's the way he reported history. He would actually interview, or he would actually be there to write down these histories to give you a picture of what was going on. Well, he existed about 200 years before Christ, so it gives you kind of a insight as to what was on the minds of the people at that time. Rome had been a republic for several years, and we've done a number of shows on what a republic is, that it's a government where the state is in the hands of the individual people, not as a collective, but as individuals. And it requires a great deal of exercise of responsibilities of the individuals in order to maintain or retain those rights that are naturally endowed by man. The rights you have in a republic don't come from the government. The rights that the government has comes from you. And you give them those rights on a day-to-day basis. And that's not what we see in most places of the world. I mean, you got the Soviet Union is supposed to be a republic, and China is supposed to be a republic. The United States is supposed to be a republic. But what they actually are is other forms of government within a republic, such as the United States is a democracy in a republic. And in that democracy, you give government a great deal of power. But you have to do this by consent, and that's how those governments obtain more and more power. But why would you give consent to the government to have more and more power if you didn't think that it benefited you? And of course, this is why we talk about these historians, because this is not a new thing, this is an old thing. You won't learn this in high school history, because there's really no percentage in teaching you about this struggle for liberty. And I quoted from the movie Moses, Cecil B. DeMille said, "Are men the property of the state, or are they free souls under God?" The same battle continues throughout the world. And it does, and it has since hundreds of years before Christ and hundreds of years after Christ, and it now, and if we go all the way back to 1500 years before Christ with the Israelites struggling against the Pharaoh. How do they obtain freedom? Because they were in bondage in Egypt. And it's the same principles that apply in all these situations, and you see them cropping up in history. You see men of history talking about them, and then you go to your high school and college history books, and they are just absolutely devoid of this information. Why? Well, these are major role players in the history of mankind. And somebody once said, it was actually George Santayana who really paraphrased it. I'm sure other people have said it too, but he said, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." And that's paraphrased by many people. Those who cannot learn from history are doomed to repeat it, or those who do not remember their past are condemned to repeat their mistakes. Or another quote, "Those who do not read history are doomed to repeat it." And the truth is that these are all famous quotes from different people throughout history that are talking about the importance of learning history. And I remember once I was working on a roof with a guy who worked for the local school, and he was the janitor, but he thought it was really cool that they weren't wasting a lot of time studying that history stuff about Romans and all that kind of stuff. I mean, who's going to need that? The assignment for the kids when they went home is to know what? What do you think it was? All the major college football teams and how they rank. That was their assignment. And they didn't call it history anymore. They don't even have a history class in that. This was years ago. They didn't even have a history class in that school anymore. They call it social studies. And, of course, he didn't want to learn anything about Romans, but he's actually following the ways of Rome. And it's just astounding how we come to these strange, bizarre conclusions as to what is history and what is not history and what is important and what is not important. When it comes to the possibilities of learning from history, there are doubtless many things that we could aspire to learn. Some of those would be more practical and useful, and in terms of contributing to the normal and decent functions of a well-meaning society. But what are those things? How do they work? What are we actually learning in these particular courses that we take about history, etc.? And so I put up two pages on our Preparing You site, one on Polybius and one on Plutarch. Polybius, what he said was the masses continue with an appetite for benefits and the habit of receiving them by way of a rule of force and violence. The people, having grown accustomed to feed at the expense of others, to depend upon their livelihood, on the property of others, institute the rule of violence, and now, uniting their forces, massacre, banish, and plunder until they degenerate again into perfect savages and find once more a master and a monarch. Rome, the Republic, was created after they threw out the Tarquinian kings. When Polybius was talking about this, masses continue with an appetite for benefits. I mean, he was just telling you right out that this is a great error in society. It destroys society. It weakens society. It turns the people of society into literal savages. They can sit in their houses very comfortably, but somebody else is kicking in a door somewhere in order to obtain funds to provide them with social welfare. Polybius was actually talking about democracies. And democracies, he believed, all failed. Now, this is 200 years before Christ. This is over 150 years or so before, well, at least 100 years before Augustus Caesar. And Augustus Caesar was the death of the Republic. It was sick already at this time, and that's why he's talking about this, where the benefits were growing and they were appeasing the mob because they were moving from a republic to a democracy, which are two opposing forms of government, which is really amazing when you know that the American Creed says, I believe in the United States, a democracy within a republic. That's what the United States is. And we used to all be citizens of the states, which were republics, and now we're all citizens of the United States. So anyway, that was the course of what we were talking about in earlier shows this week and this morning. But now I said we would, after we explain that a republic, that the government is in the hands of the people and the leaders that you elect are only titular, they only in name only, they have no real power. That's not what you have today. Your leaders have tremendous power over every aspect of your life. And almost everybody in America is on one form of social welfare or another. The vast majority, I pointed out earlier that under Augustus Caesar, at one point, half of the Roman population was on the government dole. And a lot of people say, oh, that's, we're not that bad. You know, we only have 10, 20%. If you're on Social Security, that's government dole. If you have an EBT card in your family to get food stamps, that's on the government dole. If you send your kids to public education, public school, that is the government dole. These are things paid for by the government. And the interesting thing is, 150 years ago in America, all those things were paid for by private people through charity. And it wasn't a perfect world, but then again, it's not a perfect world now. But that's what made America great. And we started becoming great when we started doing that. And we started doing that, and I mentioned the Pilgrims and never finished the story, but when they went back to private parties, a private property, with what you made was yours. There was no common storehouse. You didn't They were growing all their food and putting it in a common storehouse and hopefully to feed everybody, and they were starving every year. It never worked. There was never enough food. The day they decided what you produce is yours, starvation ended in the colonies, both in Jamestown and in Plymouth. Just astounding. Simultaneously, they came up with the same idea, hundreds of miles apart anyway. No communication between them. They both came up with the same idea because they could see that they were dying every year. I mean, half the pilgrims were dead the first year. They couldn't seem to produce enough. Jamestown, it was even worse. They were eating each other. But as soon as they said, what you produce is yours. If you don't produce enough, you don't have enough. Suddenly, there was motivation. And people started producing enough. That debate shouldn't have been a debate if these people knew history. And the interesting thing is the argument won in Jamestown by the temporary leader of Jamestown at that particular time, a very swashbuckling character who actually, he was so cantankerous and so demanding on his way over to Jamestown on the ship, they had him in chains before he got across the Atlantic, and with the intention of hanging him when they arrived in the colonies. And unfortunately, when they got to the colonies, they had to open up their sealed orders, which put him in charge. The guy they were going to hang had been put in charge by the king. And so they couldn't hang him. That would look really bad. So his life was saved. I mean, this guy went through one thing after another throughout his entire life where he was just saved. I mean, I can't believe they haven't made a dozen movies about him. He's the most swashbuckling character of the time. But his argument against the people who wanted to have this common storehouse was a quote from the Bible, because they were all quoting from the Bible thinking Christ was a socialist. And he says, if you don't work, you don't eat, which of course is Thessalonians. Changed the whole attitude. Starvation ended at that point and never returned. Well, now we've gone back to the big storehouse thing. The storehouse is literally empty. As a matter of fact, we're in debt. And we're actually just skating along on the laurels of our grandfathers. And there will come a day of reckoning. And it will be disastrous for all the world, because the whole world is going after this same foolishness that Polybius was talking about, that Plutarch was talking about, saying the real destroyers of liberty of the people is he who spreads amongst them bounties, donations, and benefits. In other words, these welfare giveaway programs. It's crazy. There is no salvation for us if we continue with this attitude of taking from our neighbors in order to provide for ourselves. It just doesn't work that way. It's destructive. Thousands of years ago, Plutarch told us who to be wary of as the real threat to liberty. But instead of avoiding those who spread amongst us gifts, gratuities, and benefits, we elect them to our own peril. All democracies will cut their own throat for want of comfort more than righteousness. Those who believe that the vote will save them are the last to accept the truth that they should not have gone through the quicksand of democracy. So anyway, that's what we're going to talk about today is democracy, because we're actually going through the different chapters of the book, The Higher Liberty. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that before, kind of give you a prelude in case you didn't see or hear the other shows that we've done on this subject. Somewhere along the way, some people began to believe that we collectively had the right to decide what was good and evil, not only for ourselves, but for our neighbors. And they keep telling us that democracy is a good thing. We call that right to choose for our neighbors by the mob, democracy. Though if you look in early America, the success and prosperity of the people was no doubt in part due to the fact that the churches, and I quote here, the churches in New England were so many nurseries of freemen. training them in the principles of self-government and accustoming them to the feeling of independence. And these petty organizations were developed in practice and principles of individuals and national freedom. Each church was a republic in embryo. The fiction became a fact, the abstract a reality. And what happens in a democracy? A democracy, because these were not democracies, these were republics. The fiction became a fact. The embryo matured, and from that embryo, the republic was born. But now, through democracy and through the fact that we sign up for these benefits, we allow our neighbors to become dictators, tyrants over us. They can rule over us. And we started this little part of this series about talking about not coveting your neighbor's goods, not kicking in the door of your neighbor in order to get what you want, not exercising force to obtain your benefits, but actually depending on liberty of choice, giving that liberty of choice to your neighbor, saying, you can help me or you not help me, but I need help. We didn't want to do that, so we became tyrants, and we said, let's get together and force our neighbor. And the fact is everyone who agreed to that idea, that concept, are now in bondage. Those who never agreed, never participated, they would still be free. But they would be excluded from every avenue of society. We pointed out very clearly, everybody's got the mark of the beast already. It's not coming, folks, it's already here. You all have your badge of servitude. And the fate that is going to befall you, you know, they say if we do not learn from history, we are going to suffer and be condemned to repeat it. Well, the fact is, if you learn from history, you're going to suffer too. What kind of suffering are you going to do? Well, you're going to have to sit and watch all these other people who won't learn from history continue to go down the tubes, down the quicksand, because they refuse to learn from history. And you can sit there and be a voice of one crying in the wilderness to make straight the way of the Lord, and they won't do it. Like we've started a radio network, an amateur radio network. And you can go to it at preparingyou.com, which is one of our websites. It's actually your website because the people are the one who are creating it. And you look up Amateur Radio Network, and there's an invite there to become a part of that network. We already have people signing up and people studying to become amateur radio operators. That coupled with our living network of people on the ground who actually have formed congregations of record, many of these people very independent, very rugged people, hardworking people, good families. They're becoming a part of that network, and they will depend upon each other. They will not depend on government, because we know that if those who depend upon those benefits, those gifts, gratuities, and benefits of men who exercise authority, will go under the authority of those men. So anyway, Americans have moved from that virtuous, self-reliant republic to a covetous democracy in a republic. This process is done more by contract and application and participation than by vote. It isn't necessarily the vote, although the vote has often been unwisely given, but it isn't the vote that condemns you. It's the application. Plutarch was accusing those who spread amongst the people gifts, gratuities, and benefits, but really it's ultimately the people who pick them up that are the problem. And the fact is often by the time you incur the need, it's too late to solve it any other way. And so, like the Israelites who went into bondage in Egypt, they had really very little choice, you know, starve or become servants in Egypt. But then suddenly, after being in bondage in Egypt for hundreds of years, they had to turn around and learn what liberty is again. They had to take care of one another. They had to glean in the field at night for their benefits. They couldn't take the benefits. They had to pay in, but they couldn't take the benefits anymore. And that was character building. Not only that, when hard times came, the people actually began to love the Israelites, and the government began to become looking very bad. And they did this in an organized way. The union and discipline of their manner of operation was essential to the maturing of themselves as a free nation. They worked together not because somebody forced them, but because they could see the wisdom of it. So what happens is you filter out all the unwise and foolish people, and only the wise people come together and actually do the job. Only the wise people are actually doers of the word, who actually form congregations, you know, this network of congregations that actually where they can start to learn to help one another. You know, when you form these congregations of record with other people who are rugged and independent, there's really nothing to do to help them out because they're all very self-sustaining. But you need to expand, evangelize, build that network, because the bigger the network, just like any insurance company, the bigger the network, the more capable it is of absorbing the calamity. Except for the fact that this network doesn't operate by compelled offerings, it operates by free will offerings, and the ministers who minister this can't force the people to contribute because they're leading you to liberty, not to bondage. If your government has the power to force you to contribute, you're not free. And see, this is the kingdom of God. This is what Christ was preaching. This is what Moses was preaching. Free will offerings, free will offerings, free will offerings. So somehow or other, people got the idea that democracy is good, but not democracy is nothing more than mob rule where 51% of the people can take away the rights of the other 49. And in order to do that, you have to enter into democracy as some sort of a member. But James Madison, in 1787, stated that in the Federalist Papers, they all wrote these Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers. You can read it in number 10. Democracy is the most vile form of government. This is James Madison. Democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property. This is James Madison saying democracy is this vile form of government, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. Fisher Ames, he was the author of the First Amendment. He said, a democracy is a volcano which conceals the fiery materials of its own destruction. These will produce an eruption and carry desolation in their way. In 1815, John Adams said democracy, now this is John Adams now. I'm not saying this, this is John Adams saying, democracy, while it lasts, is more bloody than either aristocracy or monarchy. Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There is never a democracy that did not commit suicide. These are your founding fathers. Yet I hear in the news people talking about, oh, they're bringing democracy to Egypt. Oh, the democracy is going to save us. Democracy, we're spreading, fighting for democracy around the world. Were you guys awake in history class? Or maybe you never even had a history class. Maybe you had social studies. Who are the 10 top players in the college football? You see, you're not learning from history. You haven't got a clue what history is all about. They're not talking democracy. Now, so you say, yeah, that's right, we're a republic. We're a constitutional republic. What's the constitutional republic? When you actually get somebody to try to describe to you a constitutional republic, you know what they describe to you? They describe an indirect democracy. They even called their titular representatives lawmakers. Guess what, folks? Titular representatives can't make law. They can't make law governing or regulating the rights of individuals. They have no power to do that. They can't even do it by amendment. You have natural rights endowed to you by God. How does somebody else have the right to take them away? Well, they don't, but you can give them away. And every church should be concerned about this because that's part of the weightier matters according to Christ. What did John Marshall say about, you know, who John Marshall is even? The longest serving Chief Justice of the Supreme Court? First Chief Justice of the Supreme Court? He says, between a balanced republic and a democracy, the difference is like that between order and chaos. So he didn't think much of democracy either. Yet we have American boys and women fighting and dying to spread democracy throughout the world. The New World Order is the old world chaos. Even Alexander Hamilton said, real liberty is never found in despotism or in the extremes of democracy. Did you know in a democracy, everybody gets to play tyrant? Everybody gets to be a little tyrant. You get to vote to take away from your neighbor so that you can have a new pool at the school or whatever it is that you want. You get to vote and take away from your neighbor. It's mob rule. Democracy is bad. Benjamin Franklin warned emphatically that when the people find out that they can vote themselves money, that will herald the end of the republic. He understood that a democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch. Liberty is a well-armed lamb contesting the vote. Actually, that's his opinion. Personally, you need to be stepping back even farther. I mean, Benjamin Franklin had no idea that you would screw it up as bad as you did. And neither did Adams, neither did these other men. Washington was beginning to suspect it by the end of his last term. And many times he was talking about whether or not it was even a good idea to have the Constitution. But of course it didn't really have anything to do with the general population of the people. It had a lot to do with the people who become we the people. That would be the members of the United States government. Of course, back then, the average American was not a member of the United States government because he wasn't a party to the Constitution. He had no standing. And this is a matter of Supreme Court ruling, but you probably didn't study that history either. We the people in the Constitution did not mean you, did not mean Americans. It may mean you now, but that's because you changed your relationship. And long after Adams had these things to say, Ralph Waldo Emerson even said democracy is morose and runs to anarchy. Winston Churchill wrote that socialism is a philosophy of failure, a creed of ignorance, and the gospel of envy. Its inherent virtue is equal sharing of misery. He went on to say that the best argument against democracy is a 5-minute conversation with the average voter. And you think of all the Englishmen who praise Winston Churchill, but it's like they don't even pay attention to him. It's just like with Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ was adamant, thou shalt not covet. Jesus Christ was adamant that thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. John the Baptist, who was the greatest prophet according to Christ, said that if your neighbor has no coat and you have two, share. He didn't say, if you don't have a coat, get a bunch of guys with guns and force your neighbor to give up his coat so that you can have a coat. Well, somehow or other, the churches think that's okay today. Churches used to supply all the social welfare. Now they supply almost none. Even the churches working in hospitals are dependent upon the money they get from Medicare or Medicaid and Social Security in order to keep running their operation because they're actually in business. They're not actually taking care of the needy of society. Freedom is not free, folks. It's going to cost you. And we'll talk more about this when we return to Keys of the Kingdom after a brief word from our sponsors.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Things seem to be going wrong in the world today. Every aspect of our life seems to be under attack sometimes. Many struggle to make sense out of it. What is really going on? Identifying the problem is critical to any solution. Many people claim to have answers. But what is the truth? What works? What has worked in the past? History does repeat itself, and you must learn from it. You have choices. We cannot change the course of history, but we may change our role in it. All roads lead to Rome. All roads lead to the kingdom of God. The question is, which way are you going? Join us to make sense out of it all for an iconoclastic look at the world yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and hear about the keys of the kingdom.
Okay, welcome back. The Keys of the Kingdom and the Sabbath Hour. More recently, there are other historians like Congressman Ron Paul, who is quite a student of history. And that's probably why he has been so outspoken in so many different areas, showing that there is a problem. Even when he was running for president, he knew he did not have the answer. He was trying to get the people to find the answer. I know that now that he's retired from politics, he wants to focus on homeschooling because he thinks that is one of the salvations of this nation. And at the same time, we see more autocratic people saying that homeschooling is a privilege and not a right. I can actually show you in international lists of what they consider to be human rights. I don't like to use the word human rights. Natural rights is the right to determine the education of your children. But the problem is that your children aren't your children anymore. You have manumitted your children from the family and turned them over to the state. And if you want to know how you did that, go to hisholychurch.org and read Call No Man Father and No Man on Earth Father. That's what Christ was saying. And what he meant by that is common knowledge if you study history. I mean, really study history and not just opinions of history, but actually what was going on at the time. Like Polybius, actually go and read. You know, my son, when he was growing up, they were all home taught, and he was reading a history book on, he was pretty young, I think he was like 7 or 8, and he was reading one of these little thin history books on George Washington. And then I asked him, okay, tell me about George Washington. And he told me all these little facts and stuff. And I thought, well, you know, this doesn't really tell you anything about the man. Let's find out what he wrote, and let's go read that. Well, it was a little higher caliber of reading, but I began to read and find different sections to let him read. Or I would tell him the stories or read him the stories. But I discovered that George Washington wrote all kinds of stuff, and I didn't know who he was. I had read history books, but I hadn't read the man's actual writings, his actual letters back and forth, explaining his position. Very much different man once you get to know him. Somebody would want to have as a neighbor. Yeah, you never elect a politician you don't want to have living next door, because guess what? Once you elect him in this country, he is next door, and he's in your house, and he's in your car, and he's in your life, because he's going to dictate your relationship with everything and everybody else, because you've created offices of power. But anyway, Ron Paul says, our country's founders cherished liberty, not democracy. Democracy is not liberty. Remember, it's morose, it's a volcano of violence, it's all these bad things. a democracy is not a good thing. And the fact that you want a democracy and you want the benefits shows us that you don't want to be free. Because you don't want us to be free, you want us to be servants to you, to apply and provide for you the benefits that you think you're deserving of. See, you do not only eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil for yourself, you eat of it for us, for the others. And so there will not be freedom in the land as long as that is the pervasive thinking. Now, does the majority have to change? No. Now, you can change the whole course of society, the whole course of humanity, if only a minority changed. Because righteousness has power of its own. It doesn't need the majority to change. I did find somebody who thought democracy was a wonderful thing, going back in history a little ways. That was Karl Marx. He advocated democracy because he knew it leads to communism. And he even said, democracy is the road to socialism. So if we can turn all the countries into democracies, we can turn all countries into socialist states, and then the step from socialism to communism, not hard to do. Pretty easy. And communism is always, whenever it's in the hands of a large power, it ends in the destruction of the people. It usually begins with the destruction of the people because it has to kill off everybody who wants to be free. And it's funny because democracy, socialism, communism, all these things, the pilgrims realized are a bad deal. They lead to starvation. They lead to destruction. But you wouldn't know that because you went to public schools and studied history. Or you read the modern history books, which are sham. They've been altered. I mean, 1984 is a long time ago. Came and went. Anyway, we can go on and read another quote here. It is difficult to understand how anyone who has read the proceedings of the Federal Convention can believe that it was the intention of the body to establish a democratic government. It certainly wasn't. It had absolutely no interest in establishing a democratic government. It was actually only going to establish a very limited government. The expanse, again, of the power of government is because somebody spread amongst you gifts, gratuities, and benefits, and you applied for it. So don't even bother thinking that, oh, if we had the vote, we can change things. You're outnumbered by the wicked. You're outnumbered by the greedy. You're outnumbered by the slothful. You're outnumbered by the selfish. Even if you could get the numbers, who counts the votes is probably more important than who votes. It's just not going to change things. Men must change. Lincoln said, accustomed to trampling on the rights of others, you have lost the genius of your own independence and become the fit subjects of the first cunning tyrant who rises amongst you. Isn't that the same thing that Polybius was saying? There's your solution. Stop being those eating at those tables. In order to do that, you have to set another table. And there's a way to do that, but you need to come together to make it happen. The masses continue with an appetite for benefits and the habit of receiving them by way of the rule of force and violence, like you've been doing. And those, remember, those benefits are everything from public school to public health to what have you. And you have gone that route, warned for century upon century in history. That particular quote from Polybius, it talks about people, you know, depending for their livelihood on the property of others. It's in his book called The Histories, because it is history. It is the way you go. The guy was brilliant. The guy was honest. The guy was a pagan. He might have become a Christian had Christ come along. But the problem is we got a lot of people saying they're Christians today, and they don't believe, and they don't see, and they don't understand what's what. Under a democratic government, the citizen exercises the power of sovereignty, and those powers will be first abused and afterwards lost. if they are committed to an unwieldy multitude. And, of course, I'm quoting Edward Gibbon's in The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, because he understood that those democracies were destructive. And that, of course, is what's happening. You know, democracy only works in heaven where it's not needed. If all men were saints, democracies would work, because no man would want to take away the rights of his neighbor, take away the stuff of his neighbor. You could never vote anything in about increasing the budget. Couldn't do it at the expense of your neighbor. You couldn't demand. You wouldn't do that because you couldn't covet. And you would be a saint, so you couldn't covet. You just wouldn't even want to. But unfortunately, in a democracy where everybody is not a saint, that's exactly what happens. And that's why in Exodus 23:2, it warns you about democracy. It says, "Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil, neither shalt thou speak in a cause to decline after many," in that multitude, to wrest judgment, to judge that it's okay to take from your neighbor, because most of us want to do it. If all the world, except for 8 people, want to do evil, what happens? They get to do it? No, destruction cometh. That's what happens. Destruction cometh. Another quote for you. "A simple democracy is the devil's own government. Loves it. Devil loves." That's Benjamin Rush, by the way. "Devil loves democracy." So we're dealing a lot with deception here. Deception because of ignorance. Not because anybody told you something that's not true. They just simply didn't tell you what was true. I mean, the best lies are full of truth and just leave out all of truth, which makes a lie. And of course, you know, it's the old doggy do recipe. Put in the best of everything, except you add a pinch of doggy do. It just doesn't seem like you want to eat it anymore. Anyway, Caesar was right. Mankind is governed by names and their definitions. And this was the definition of democracy in 1928. This is actually a government published definition of democracy in 1928. "A government of the masses, authority derived through mass meetings or any form of direct expression, results in mobocracy. Attitude toward property is communistic, negating property rights. Attitude toward law is that the will of the majority shall regulate whether it is based upon deliberation or governed by passion, prejudice, and impulse without restraint or regard for consequences. Results in demagogism, license, agitation, discontent, and anarchy." Definition of democracy in 1928. And so all you soldiers out there who lost friends fighting to spread democracy and defend democracy throughout the world today, or think that's what you're doing, how come you didn't know that? That's what it used to say in the U.S. Army training manual. At least it did in 1928. It doesn't say that anymore. Somebody took that out. And you didn't even notice because you hadn't been studying history since 1908. Because in 1908, somebody got it in their mind, let's change the history books. Let's put millions upon millions of dollars into circulation for the sole purpose of changing history books. Let's create a fellowship to change the history books. We'll get scholars, guys who graduate. We'll pay them money if they write the books the way we want them to do. They had already approached some of the major historians of the time, and they wouldn't go along with it. And they had just approached. They couldn't tell them exactly what they were up to. So they actually got a bunch of new college graduates. They funded them, and they groomed them to write new histories. And then they funded the printing of the books, and they put them into the schools. This is back in the early 1900s. And then they moved from where most people were being educated outside of public schools to most kids being educated in public schools. With these new public school books, And you, the taxpayer, financed the making of an ignorant population who didn't know that they will take your sons and daughters and then make their instruments of war. And all those brave sons and daughters who are dying in the world today, in one government after another, defending democracy, are carving their own caskets, digging their own graves with their blood and sweat because they lack knowledge. By June of 1952, the following definition was altering the understanding and attitudes of young Americans going into the military, because in the Army Field Manual, Soldier's Guide of 1952, it says, meaning of democracy, because the United States is a democracy, the majority of the people decide how our government will be organized and run. And that includes the Army and the Navy and the Air Force. The people do this by electing representatives. And these men and women carry out the wishes of the people. That's a huge shift of opinion and thinking. A huge change in the definition of words. How do you cure people of that? Because I can't even... There are so many words they have done this to. I can't even hardly talk to people for 5 minutes without having to bring out a dictionary to show you that, oh, well, that didn't used to mean this. That they've changed the meaning of the words. That you keep the same word, but you're changing the meaning of the words. And people don't know what you're talking about. Changing definitions deceives the people. The multitude of those who err is no protection from error when you do this. Here's another quote for you. This is Benjamin Disraeli, Prime Minister of Great Britain. Fairly famous fellow. If you establish a democracy, you must in due time reap the fruits of a democracy. With a great increase of the public expenditure, you will in due season have wars entered into from passion and not from reason. And you will in due season submit to peace ignominiously sought and ignominiously obtained, which will diminish your authority and perhaps endanger your independence. You will in due season find your property is less valuable, your freedom is less complete. Well, I think that's kind of an understatement, but that was a guy who died in 1881. Of course, now, did you study that when you were in school? No. Could your children study that today? Not if they were in school. They could do it if you were homeschooling your children. Ben Franklin advised that a nation of well-informed men who have been taught to know and prize the rights which God has given them cannot be enslaved. It is the region of ignorance that tyranny begins. And that's what your kids are going to school to become, the region of ignorance. And you're all arguing over the new core curriculum when you've already been brainwashed. Your parents, your grandparents have been brainwashed. This has been going on for a century. It's a long road back, but you have to get out of that boat and off of that train because it's leading you to destruction. Those rights given to you by God depend upon us valuing our neighbor's rights as much as we value our own, which is the very definition of virtue. Nothing is beyond re-examination if you are to be free. In a constitutional republic, you might have some safeguards. But Patrick Henry argued against the Constitution of the United States because he saw that when evil men take office, the whole gang will be in collusion. They will keep the people in utter ignorance. I mean, he knew this way back then. And steal their liberties by ambuscade. Do we understand those flaws in the Constitution that he was talking about? I've written a whole book about it. You can send me absolutely nothing. And you can read the book online for free. It doesn't cost you anything. You don't even have to give me your email. Contracts, Covenants, and Constitutions. And we'll put it into perspective. Actually, if you don't want to read it, we've got at least half a dozen, I think eight audios covering the basics of the book. So you can just sit there and plug in with your headset. You know, walk around with your, is it called a Walkman now? I don't know. Your MP3 player. You can download them all for free and find out why the Constitution is not your salvation. What is your salvation? Repentance. Turning around. Becoming the social welfare of those people who will take back their responsibilities. Being there, watching each other's back, caring about one another, loving one another, as if you actually cared about each other. And we're willing to lay down. You're going to have to put away your anger and your resentments, your prejudices and your selfishness. You're going to have to actually spend a little time. It's going to take a little overtime, as a matter of fact. Because you spent so long on the bench or lazing around like the foolish virgins who don't really do anything but whine and cry and dance about. It's really very simple. You just have to create a society within a society. Now, there will be roadblocks to this. They will not like to see you do this. But if you're going to survive the decline and fall of the Roman Empire or the image of the Roman Empire, you're going to have to take back some serious responsibility. It was not the Constitution that made this nation great, but the noble individuals who rose up every day, worked in the fields, in the factories, cared for their families, provided for the honest needs of their community. James Russell Lowell said, "Democracy gives every man the right to be his own oppressor. He begins the process by oppressing his neighbor. Can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we have removed their only firm basis, a conviction in the mind of the people that these liberties are of the gift of God, that they are not to be violated, but with His wrath?" Well, that may be coming. Democracy has no inherent right to the rights of others unless you sign up to the idea that it's okay to take from your neighbor so that you can have these benefits. We relinquish rights by consent, and that is consent. That application is consent by mutual benefit. I often wonder whether we do not, this is Judge Leonard Hand, I recognize it without even looking at who said it, we do not rest our hopes too much upon the Constitution, upon laws and courts. These are false hopes. Believe me, these are false hopes. Liberty lies in the hearts of men and women. When it dies there, no Constitution, no law, no court can save it. You have to resuscitate that idea in the hearts and minds of others by being there for one another. That means physically and spiritually gathering with one another to be there for one another. And that's your assignment for this week. And so anyway, you don't want to be like Cain. You want to be like God said, "Love thy neighbor as thyself." So until then, peace be upon your house. And may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.